Welcome in, everybody. And I'm joined today with Grant. How you doing, Grant?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Probably better than you. Grant just returned from a little bit of a journey. We'll talk about that coming up here. But TJ joins us. How you doing, TJ? How you doing, stranger?
Pretty good. Pretty good.
Good to see you. We've also got Doug. Doug, how you feeling?
I could use a nap, Scott.
I think we all could. And then we have His Highness Jensen. How are you doing, Jensen?
I'm doing swell. I'm wonderful.
He, for those of you out there that can't see, which is everybody, he is donning his renowned cheeseburger Snuggie, in case anybody's wondering. Well, we're all really, really busy. We're in the middle of show season, hot and heavy. We just wrapped up the 48 and 48 event, which was amazing. We'll talk about that a little bit. But I really just wanted to get together and catch up with everybody, see what we were doing. So this episode will probably be a little bit shorter. Unfortunately, JB can't join us. He had to, on a Saturday, had to work and had a 5 a.m. meeting, which is kind of bull crap. But, you know, that's what you got to do is what you got to do. But let's start with Grant. Grant, I know you've been busy with work as well, but what's been happening on your bench?
Not too much. I finished up my scope dog, based it up and everything, got it done. There was a few odds and ends I had to finish up from the 48 and 48 last week. I have the old SDKF 7-1 to my kit, the quad one, and I've been collecting parts for it over the years. So I've got like metal barrels for the gun. I've got the photo edge sheet. I finally just got the tires for it. So I think I might start that, but Scott was me talking before we started. There's a 2A6 that might be calling my name right now because I don't know. That looks like a lot of fun. Other than that, I just got off of a plane about 6 hours ago from Korea, where I spent the last 3 days their time, 4 days our time. It's 16 hours ahead. Flight's 13 hours. So I'm a little worn out, but I'm doing good. I think I'll take a nap. And then I will start working on my 2A6 instead of my I think I'll wait for my 7-1. That's what I'm up to.
That sounds great. Doug, what have you been working on?
I've been working on a cold. Unfortunately, when I get a cold like this, which I get, it's a traditional thing. I do it for the 48 and 48 every year. But I the solvents and stuff, especially to me, extra thin, just irritate my throat and chest when I'm not feeling well. So I've stayed out of the room for about a week, but while we were doing the 48 and 48, I did the little M8, to me is 48 scale M8 howitzer gun carriage. I built a little base for it. I even did the figure, sort of. I'm not good at that yet, but I put it all on a little vignette, and I had a blast.
Yeah, it turned out really good. I really like that. And that kit is so much fun.
Yeah, it's just a joy. I've been working on other kits and they aren't so much fun. So, that was a nice little reprieve.
Very cool. That was a great event and, had a lot of fun. Really enjoyed watching you put that together. TJ, what have you been working on over on your bench?
Oh boy. What haven't I been working on? So I did not participate in the 48 hour build this year. As far as building anything goes, I tuned into the streams and I chatted with some people, gave Mike Baskett a hard time once or twice. But the main reason why I didn't participate is I had to finish the Musaru build, which was due that Saturday. So I could literally not afford to sacrifice any time Friday night or Saturday morning working on something that wasn't the Musaru build. I didn't want to finish the Musaru build for a couple of reasons. A, the kit is absolutely dog shit. It's not a good kit. Just full stop. That was the same complaint everyone had. It's just not good. Right. It's an ICM kit. It's old and it is not good. The plastic's terrible. The fit was bad. The instructions were annoying. And, frankly, I wasn't interested in the subject. The reason why I finished is because I think it was 2 years ago. It was my turn and I did not even get close to finishing that thing because it was a Gundam and I had no interest in that. And I was going through a rough time anyways with my modeling. And the last thing I wanted to do was build something that I had zero, like, negative interest in. I had mild interest in trucks. I like military trucks. I mean, I'm a little boy at heart who doesn't like big trucks. Like, you know, we all love that stuff. But just the quality, like, it was so bad. God, it was terrible. And I put it off and put it off and put it off, but I got it done with, I think, 36 minutes to spare Saturday morning. I emailed my pictures to IPMS Hamilton. They had to be in by 11:59 a.m. So I think it was like 35 minutes to spare. When I did the math, I think I did noon, but yeah. So with about a half hour to spare, I got it done. It turned out okay. I'm not going to lie. I rushed it, and I'm not going to deny it. The other reason why I didn't care about really want to finish it, and if I hadn't completed 2 years ago, I probably would have punted this one too, like our buddy Julian did at OTB, which I sympathize with him 100%. Like, oh man, I've been there, and I do not hold that against him. He bent it, and rightfully so, because that's where that kit belongs.
Yep.
But the main reason why was because Mike Basquets is amazing.
Yep.
And he understood the assignment, I think, better than anyone else. A fact that I have told him, because he did it as a Hot Wheels car.
Yeah. With
the red tires and everything. Now that I think the red tire Hot Wheels are a little before my time, but the Hot Wheels aren't. I mean, I grew up with Hot Wheels as a kid. I had a whole huge box of them, and he had a package for it and everything.
The vacuum formed blister pack was great.
That
was a great touch.
Yeah. Not only did he make that piece of shit kit look halfway decent for what it is, with a nice Hot Wheels looking paint job and everything, he made the freaking package. And it's just like, dude, like, why are we even here? Just John Malkovich and Rounders was like something KGB. He's like, paid that man his money. That's how I am. Like, give that man his metal. Like, that's what you need to do with Mike, because it's awesome. If he doesn't win, I'm gonna be very disappointed, because it's so freaking cool. Yeah, when he posted those pictures, I messaged him like, that's amazing. You just win, man. Like, 100% honest. Like, I'm not being facetious. Like, that's awesome.
I don my cap, sir.
Yeah. So that's that. And the other thing that I've been spending my time on is a Tiger. And I don't build German armor. I think most people know that about me. It's not my thing. I don't particularly like it for a number of reasons, most of which is I think they're boring. And I think Tigers are boring too, because they're just big squares with a big gun on it, which, okay. But I was suffering from FOMO when everyone was getting their big Tiger boxes from TACOM. So I bought one of them. I didn't buy the whole box. I have no need for three Tigers. So I bought one. I bought the non-autocarious one. And I've been putting it together. I'm like probably like 95% done, and it's been really enjoyable. I don't really have a particular love for the subject, but I like building models that are nice, and it's a nice model. I'm kind of getting into a little bit. It was hard for me to find a scheme. I just ended up going with one of the ones in the bot that comes in the kit. So what I'm going to do is 507th Heavy Tank Battalion. The box art shows it the way the reference photo does, with extra track armor, or not extra track armor, but extra tracks on at least the left side of the turret. Cause that's the only photo I can find is from that angle. And the tactical numbers are painted on the track, which I think is really cool. And they show that on the box art, but then on the marking options, it doesn't show that. And they don't give you extra track to do it. So luckily I just 3D printed my own tracks. So I have as many tracks as I want. So I'm going to add those. And then, I think it had some extra track on the front plate too, on both sides. So I've got more than enough extra track. So I'm going to do that and add those. And yeah, I got to redo some welds on the side, just because it's a bathtub style hull, and the sponsons over the tracks kind of like bend down. So when you put the top plate on, it leaves a pretty significant gap on one side. So I just chiseled the kit welds out, which sucks, cause they're actually really, really nice. And, I'll just go back and add that with probably green stuff. I've never done green stuff welds, so I'll try that. And yeah, that's pretty much it. I got the RFM upgrade kit for it, which fits dimensionally pretty well, everything that I've tried, which is good. So yeah, then I got to add the side skirts, and then it'll be done. I can take pictures of it and then hopefully start painting it.
You know, you building a Tiger is a little different, but that's awesome. So speaking of awesome, dramatic pause here. Ladies and gentlemen, our friend, our good friend, Mr. Jensen Taylor in the UK has been working on a model.
It's shocking, I know. Working on the 48 and 48 build. I didn't finish. I don't care. Priority for me was actually glue something together and paint it. So I did the little Rubicon models LVT4. I think it's the exact same version JB did, that was very heavily modulated, very blue, very dusty, very rusty. And I got this at Telford last year, and it was one of those kits that as soon as JB did it in the very, very exaggerated, heavily modulated style, which I think the LVT lends itself for, I was like, right, well, I have to try and replicate that.
So you copied him?
I'd say that's
yes,
okay.
You did. You copied him. I don't like it when people copy people.
Well,
you
I didn't
replicated
think,
him.
I didn't think JB invented modulation. So I'd say that's fine. Because mine's nowhere near as blue. Yeah.
Rules for thee, not for me. I see how it is.
That's exactly what it is.
How very British of you.
This is mine. I'm taking this. So I painted my... It's good. It's a great little kit because really once it's all assembled, it's like 15 parts. Bit of a cop-out, but it's really nice. These are like... I think they're like 1/56 scale. Bit of a funny scale, but they're a really good size. The plastic's quite tough, and I think that's mainly because these are like for tabletop gaming sort of uses, so they are like really durable, really hard plastic. Did a little bit of scratch building, or as Zach calls it, proper modeling, on the front underside, because like on the front of the box it shows like a metal, it looks like it's a plique, but it's not. It's like a metal skid plate that's bolted on the front, which it shows it on the box and it shows it on every reference I've seen online, but isn't on the kit. So I just took some plasticard, bent it round, glued it on, and used some pewter foil, punched out some bolts, glued them on. It looks like it's part of the kit now. It looks cool. It's a nice little feature. It doesn't add a lot, but those who have seen the vehicle know it's there and know it was missing. So I added that. Painted with MRP, a discussion me and Zach were having the other night in Discord. It's such a great paint. It's like fantastic. I love MRP, especially when it comes to aircraft paints. Spray them really low PSI. I spray them about 8 PSI. And if you build them up thin and a low pressure, you don't actually end up using that much paint. It is just, it takes time to get that solid base coat.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's like, do I have the patience to sit there and want to get that? Because I know he just did it on the T-34. And he ended up, I think, nearly using half a bottle. But, you know, 4BO on a black base, you're going to want a strong color. But anyway, talking about me, not him. He gets enough attention. He's not even a podcast member. So this has been painted, modulated, pin washed. It's been chipped. I don't want to beat it up as much as JB did with his. So it's going to have minimal rust and sand and dust and dirt effects. And I promised myself I'm not working on a single thing else until this is finished, which it really nearly is. It's got like one more session left in it. And I've, for some reason, didn't post any pictures on the internet, which I still need to get around to doing because I'm really pleased with it. I think the modulation's turned out really well. The paint is incredibly smooth because, one, I think that's what MRP lends itself to. Really smooth paint. I used intermediate blue. I didn't use any accurate colors. This is just I just picked up a, like, I think it's post 1942 MRP aircraft intermediate blue. Didn't really care for accuracy. I just picked it up and that looks okay. Just highlighted it with white, modulated it quite extreme. One thing I realized now, having done a pin wash and detail painted and chipped, is I didn't go extreme enough. And that's something I realize with every single time I modulate. Whenever you think you've gone, it's like, oh, that's extreme. It's not far enough because you will lose it. Plus, it was gloss coated for decals, then satin coated with VMS. So it is just going to knock it back again a little bit. But apart from that, yeah, that's where we are. One more session left on the LVT. And then after that, I'm either, well, I too got the Big Tiger box set. So I'm going to crack on with one of them because everyone's building them. They look really good. I've only heard like of two issues. One's the cupola. I think that's keyed wrong. And I think you said, TJ, was it the fuel intake covers, fuel things on the back?
Oh, for the Tiger?
Yeah.
Sorry, I wasn't paying attention. Yes. You were talking, I just zoned out.
What's new?
I'm like, oh God, this fucking British accent just go on and on and on. Yes, there are issues with the kit. Yeah. Minor issues. Amazing. Minor issues.
Yeah, just minor.
Still a good kit. For $40, I think it's amazing.
Yeah, really surprising how cheap it is considering how much you get in the box. So I'm going to crack on with one of them. I also accidentally slipped and fell and ordered a 116th Achilles. So that's on its way on Monday. That'll make a nice addition to the insulation of my house. But apart from that, yeah, it's nice to be building again. Like, I know you guys can see there's now a lamp above my keyboard, so I can work at the computer. So I have zero excuses now. And it's proving to work well. Good place to work. Yeah, it's good. It's nice to be back.
Yeah, I mean, it looks terrific. Don't get up from your bench too quick. You're going to bang your head. Love the TJ David Attenborough, you know, British thing. That was pretty funny. So I've been busy as well for the 48 and 48. I chose this year. There was no scale restrictions. So I chose a little Vespid 1/72 scale Hetzer. Honestly, it was a lot of fun. It was very, very tiny. Some of the smallest parts I've ever used. The photo etch brackets for the exhaust on the rear plate are probably the smallest photo etch parts I've ever used. It was crazy, but I somehow got it done. It's all complete. It's not painted, but it's all put together. And then Tamiya USA sent over the new Leopard, which I've been kind of hoping we'd see one, and I dove into it. So I'm about 75% through that. It's typical Tamiya. It's wonderful. I built the Grant was talking earlier about the Leopard 2A6. I built one of those a while back, and it was good. This one is a completely new kit. No parts from the A6 were used in it. And there's a lot of enhancements, a lot of neat things. It comes with paint masks like their aircraft sets come with for the periscopes and the headlights and things like that. That's a nice little feature. It's got photo etch in the kit. They also sent me a metal barrel for it. Which is nice. And they have a really innovative set of Lincoln length tracks. They give you a long run for the bottom and the top, and then the end sections, rather than trying to build it up in sections like a lot of Lincoln length tracks do. They actually give you workable sections over both the idler wheel and the drive sprockets. And that's a really cool idea. So really nice kit. We're going to have that available at Commies Fest next weekend in Denver for people to take a look at and see. And then I'm going to hand off the kit to Mr. Benani, who will put the NATO tritone on there. And undoubtedly, that will be really, really beautiful. So, yeah, it's been great to be working on the bench, been really, really busy. You forget, though, on that Leopard, you forget just how big modern armor is. You know, the Abrams and the Leopard, I mean, these are big vehicles. That Leopard is like a city block long, and the turret is nearly the length of the entire hull. It's huge.
Touch on that real quick, Scott. I think a lot of people forget how big all of these vehicles really are. That's a common thing I've heard when people see, like, for instance, a Sherman in real life for the first time. They're like, wow, these are really big. Yeah. Yeah, they were. They're like 13 feet tall and like 25 feet long. Yeah. Yeah. They're big. Like I know, like, oh, it's like, oh, Tiger is so big. I'm like, yeah, so are other tanks too. Like, tanks are pretty big. Yeah. If your only real experience with them is plastic models, like, yeah, when you see the real thing, you're like, oh my God, these things are massive. And I think we mentioned it when we were doing the show report or whatever, the follow up to going to Fort Moore. Like, yeah, seeing like an American T-34 or the T-29, like those things were massive, absolutely massive, just so big, almost the size of modern tanks. And a lot of people forget just how large modern armor is. Yeah. I mean, the Abrams is the heaviest modern tank. It's stout. It is a big piece of machinery. And so is the Leo's like right behind it. They're freaking massive.
Yeah, they're impressive. They're wide. They're just like you said, huge vehicles. But anyway, yeah, to me, it's done a great job. That kit will be out May 31st. Kit itself is like $61 MSRP, which I think is really terrific. You get, you know, like I said, the mask, the photo etch. The metal barrel is extra, but it does come with a one-piece injection molded barrel, if that's kind of more your speed. So I think it's a very competitively priced kit, but I'm enjoying it so far. And I'll post some pictures after commies and some comments on it, and let people see what I came up with on it. So, well, let's talk about the 48 and 48 for a few minutes, and just kind of throw this open to everybody. But as everybody who listens to the Posse knows, it's something we believe in. We do it every year. We're going to continue to do that. And this year, as always, our partners were right there. They donated a lot of stuff, and we even had some new partners, and you just really appreciate it. But, you know, Bases by Bill, Value Gear Details with Steve Munsell, Tankcraft, Tamiya USA, and Andy's Hobby Headquarters, which was a new partner for us in this. And we also had some Jeremy Moore donated an Achilles that was won by our buddy JC Osborne. Anyway, we ended up with, between Darren and I, over 50 lots for auction that were all donated, and that's amazing. And so we kind of took a look at it. We said, well, let's set a goal. Last year we raised in our auctions here in the U.S. about $3,500 or so, somewhere around there. And so Darren and I said, well, let's shoot for $5,000. Let's see how we can do. And we ended up raising just under $9,000 on the auctions, which was awesome. You know, the community really steps up and supports, you know, paying way, way more than the items they're bidding on are worth. And, you know, it's all for a great cause, which is Models for Heroes. And, you know, appreciate what Malcolm does. It's a great charity. You know, we can use scale modeling to help people. But anyway, back to the USA piece of that. We have a community that really gets involved, and the way they like to get involved is to take shots at each other and overbid each other. And so, you know, that was a lot of fun. TJ, I know you couldn't participate, but I know you were watching some of the bloodbath from afar, watching, you know, people snipe each other. But, you know, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I was too busy needling Mike Basquette when he was on about his. I'm pretty sure they built the Trans-Siberian Railroad in less time than it's taken him to build a 6-inch length of Russian track to put a tank over. Oh. But yeah, I'm not going to let him forget that. I'm just messing with you, Mike. I know. Hopefully, you know, that's all in jest, buddy.
Yeah, we had, obviously the geeks, you know, Darren and I kind of put it together. But, you know, we had Eric Curvina. He joined in the auctions. That was great to see him in there. We had the Modeling Insanity guys on there with us. We just had kind of a casting of characters here that really, really get behind this event, what it stands for. Grant, I know you were in there for some of it and everything, but, you know, it's a lot of fun seeing people, you know, just willing to bid things up to really support a good cause.
Yeah, it was a really good time. You know, Rob was there from the Insanity Podcast. He won something. He got the mats from Tankcraft. Yeah. Yeah, I think he got those. Everybody was there. It was just a great time. You know, watching the surprise offers that were coming up, like the Mang dunes, the dune, the copters, and the spice miner. That was $500 plus, you know, threw in a free mug. And then one of the great things I think was really, really, really fun was like we were lucky enough to have AK as a sponsor, and Rick Lawler was there with us most of the time. And Rick Lawler was side, he said he'd sign books. Then he actually got
Adam Wilder.
Sorry, I'm still half asleep. Adam Wilder signed two of his books, and we raffled those off. You know, stuff like that was fantastic. Bases by Bill threw in an extra 148 scale carrier deck to the guy that won the Tamiya kit. And, you know, the stuff like that that was happening, you know, during the whole event was, it was fantastic. And watching the literally, you know, Joe Porsche and all those guys cutting each other at the last second or trying to cut each other at the last second. That was fun. It was, you know, Darren was, had the stopwatch out. He was doing all this stuff. And I don't want to talk about Darren too much because he got one from me. I still call
power,
foul.
Power snipe on that one, man.
Darren, I still call foul because you had the clock and you had to type in. So, but no, it went to a great, great home and he's going to love that kit. But you know, there was so much out there. It was such a great time. And, you know, just the building and talking with everybody and everybody who was online with us, it was a blast. It's a really good time.
Yeah. I feel like, you know, not limiting it to 148 scale, yep, and not requiring a completion. I think that really helped encourage participation. And, you know, I think moving forward, that's a really, really good move. I think we want to try and get more people involved in. You know, JB afterwards, he and I were talking. We had some kind of ideas for some out of the box kind of auctions for next year, but, you know, maybe set our goal, you know, next year at, you know, north of 10,000, you know, yep. But it's just a fun event. Really, really good time. I don't know, Jensen, were you able to catch any of it either in the UK or here in the US?
Oh yeah. When I was building, and the streams were quite full. Me, Zach and Jackson, when they weren't like on stream, we were all in Discord. We had it on. We were all watching it. Yeah, we had it on the entire time while building away. Yeah, it was great. I loved it.
It was nice. I like it when the bidding gets personal. You know, you get you get Mark Bradley and Joe Porsche going back and forth. They'd overbid each other by a dollar and then make comments, you know.
When friends become enemies.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. What you gonna do now, Mark? It was really good. And then, yeah, you know, it's fun watching people build too. Like you guys, yeah, said, you know, Doug, that, you know, we talked about, yep, your M8 that you put together and everything. But, you know, I think those auctions definitely become the highlight just because it's fun to watch the competition all for a good cause.
I think it was interesting too, to see, you know, what people were building. I mean, Rick Lawler built another aircraft. I mean, that's two in a row for him. So we officially have to call him an aircraft modeler now. So, I mean, and there was people building cars, there was people building tanks, there was people painting figures. There was a guy building a 1/350th or 1/700th scale battleship.
A 350th scale Tirpitz.
Tirpitz battleship, you know, and then we had a, you know, other people on. It was just the different amount of things that were being differently built is so much fun. And I like the way they changed the rules this year about saying, like you said earlier, Scott, that it didn't have to be 48. It didn't have to be done. It's just participation. And that was fun. And that was a great time. And I think that's very much way they need to keep that for the future. And I'm sure they will. And it just made it so much more not affordable, but more reachable for everybody to be a part of. And, you know, I can't say enough about the sponsors all around the world. I mean, there were some Duncan two thin coats paints went for $60, a full run for $60 in the UK. I can't believe that. A full run. I was like, if I could have bet on that, I would have. Oh, my gosh. But, you know, still, I mean, there was things that, you know, $300, $400, $500, $600. Well, not 600, but, you know, $500 plus. Yeah, yeah. You know, it was amazing.
Yeah, James tried to get in on the Dune, yep, kits, and he couldn't even get his bids typed, and people were going over and above. That was a great one. That was actually one I donated. And, you know, the Dune kits are awesome, but, you know, it's kind of topical at the moment. But, mm-hmm, I had no idea that it would get that way. And, you know, it ends up being it's not about the items. You know, no. There were, I think the signed Andy's kits, the 1/16 scale, I think that was a little bit about the kits, but, mm-hmm, I think mostly it was just about people just saying, okay, I'm going to donate. Mm-hmm. So let's get in and have some fun with this auction. And, you know, I really don't want Mark Bradley to win this bid, so I'm going to make sure he does it.
You know? Yeah, that's definitely true. I think it became cutthroat for a long time. It was every night was cutthroat, and but it was fun. I mean, it was really a blast. It's not every day you get to sit around and talk, you know, with 50 people that are we're all building models. Of course, we're not all on screen, but we're talking to them and people are sending us, asking us questions, and JB sitting there, and Mike figured out a way to help him fix his turret for his Tiger by just applying a lot more liquid cement on top, and he got it, finally got it off. So, you know, I think JB was a little frustrated at that point. And I think Mike or Mark helped him not be frustrated. So that was great. You know, seeing everybody giving Rob a hard time because he actually painted, had paint on a model. That was hilarious, you know, and some of the aircraft guys, all the aircraft guys are doing these wonderful work, and the kits they're working on, and some of the stuff that the aircraft guys had up for auction were phenomenal. I mean, the decal sets alone, those were beautiful. I mean, they were just, you don't think, you know, there's like 15, you know, 10, 15 models you could build up one of those kits. And that's a lot of, you know, I don't know who's going to build 15 F-35s, but still, I mean, that's great. I mean, you have such a choice.
Well, some of those decal sheets ended up going for $100 for a sheet of decals. You know, they were really, really good quality. Anyway, it was a great event. Again, thank you to everyone who participated, the people that were bidding on the items. Obviously, the sponsors, you know, just couldn't have done without them. It was a lot of fun.
Definitely.
All right. Well, let's get into just kind of an open conversation here. Some of us are headed out to Denver this coming weekend for Commies Fest. Looking forward to that. And, you know, there's going to be the usual activities kind of centered around the show. But haven't seen TJ. When was the last time you and I saw each other? Was it Commies last year? Or no, it was San Marcos.
Yeah, it was in Texas.
Yeah.
I fly out Thursday night. I'm taking the red eye. I leave at 10 p.m. East Coast time, and I arrive at midnight Colorado time. So that's like 2 o'clock in the morning my time. Mm. So hopefully JB is back in town by then. If not, he's made it so I can get out of the airport. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Really looking forward to it. I always do. Can't wait.
Yeah, it's going to be a blast. You know, we've got Robbie coming from Canada. We got Justin coming from Texas and Jeremy from Idaho, you know, and, you know, great community there in the Denver area, too. It's going to be a lot of fun. You know, we'll hit the hobby shops and the bookshop where you're never comfortable, but they have great deals and, you know, get some food. So
it's I can't wait for Aberdeen Books. I love that place. It's amazing.
Yep. Just don't touch the thermostat, man.
Yeah. I got a little mental list of some books that I want. There's some reference books that I know I'm pretty sure he has. I think I saw them the last time I was there, which was last year. And hopefully I can grab one or two of those. I got a little walking around money in my wallet that I've been hanging on to specifically for this show and for Amps Nats. Yeah, next month. Sounds crazy, but it's like literally next month. I should probably tell my job that I'm gonna be off those days. sure my boss would like to know.
Yeah, speaking of that, TJ, you've got a new job. How's that going?
I did get a new job. It's pretty cool. It's different. It's not the first time I've worked in an office, but it's been a long time since I worked in an office. And the last time I worked in the office, I sat behind a computer all day making drawings of mechanical piping systems. And now I do not have to do that when I'm in the office. I got was offered the job of labor manager for a small mechanical contractor, and I took it. So they asked me what it would take to get me there. I told them, and my now boss said, yeah, we can work with that. So I took the job, and yeah, it's pretty cool. I've never had this job before. This is a step up from where I was and where I had been for years. I know my previous contractor, they're sad to see me leave. I was sad to leave. I've made a lot of friends working there. I took one of them with me when I left. So I know they weren't too happy with that, but that's the way it works. There's no rule against it. We're free to go wherever we want to work. You're allowed to, I'm allowed to solicit. And as a mechanic, you're allowed to solicit your own work too. So I brought my buddy Sam with me. So she had worked with me for 2.5 years. She's a welder. And yeah, I was like, hey, do you want to come work this company with me? And she's like, yes, actually I do. So that was cool. Yeah, it's pretty neat. So I guess I'm kind of like the boss, which is interesting. So yeah, I'm still not entirely used to like wearing nice clothes to work all day. I haven't had to do that in a really, really long time. I could wear clean jeans and a nice t-shirt. Not even t-shirt, nice button-up shirt every day. I still wear my boots a lot because I do go out to the field and visit the guys that work for me. But yeah, it's pretty cool. And my brother works there, so that's always, he works in the office too, so I know he's happy that I'm there. We've worked together for most of our careers, other than a short period of time when we did not. But yeah, for the most part, we've worked together. Yeah, it's pretty cool. I'm excited. I like it. It's a challenge because I have to manage a lot of stuff and plan a lot of things because that's, my boss is big in the planning, which I'm there for. So it's pretty cool. Been there for a week and a half and I've hired two people already. Probably going to try and hire a third guy this coming week. So yeah, it's pretty neat. I've never got to do that either. I've never directly hired anyone. I've recommended people for jobs lots and lots and lots in my career, but yeah, never actually sat down with someone and interviewed them. I've been interviewed more than once, but I've never actually interviewed anyone, which is interesting. It's different, but yeah, it's pretty cool.
That's, I mean, congratulations. It's a great opportunity. One thing I wanted to talk about, Jensen, was you sent a picture of when your big box of Tigers was delivered. That was epic.
Yeah. So British postmen don't really tend to care what your parcels are or what's in them, even though it clearly says like Tacom, Tigers, model kits, all that stuff. They think, I mean, probably the same opinion as TJ, they think Tigers belong in the outside garbage because that's where it was waiting for me when I arrived home, just very politely placed with the rest of the trash. good job it wasn't a rainy day.
It's like, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you for that. That was kindly appreciated. But when it's when it's stuff that's not as important, they take all due and care to put it somewhere nice and safe.
That is right where Tigers belong, right in the trash. He says as he's
building it up,
poured himself into one for the last week or so.
Wanted to take a minute here also to shout out a couple of the modelers from the local Salt Lake area. John Vickis, who's recovering from kind of an emergency surgery, and you know, went and visited him this week. He's doing a lot better. So John, if you hear this, we're thinking about you. And our good buddy Martin Drayton, who was up giving a snowboard lesson in the mountains here in Utah, and he was hit by a skier and ended up in the hospital with a couple of fractures and is a little bit the worse for wear. So we're going to go see him tomorrow. But Martin, feel better as well. And hopefully you guys will have a quick recovery.
Definitely. Definitely. And anything to slow down Martin from building so many models is fine with me.
Oh, it's not going to slow him down. It's going to, he's going to be home for a while.
So I know that's scary. I don't know what it's going to be models flying out of that house.
Yeah. Well, Grant, what's coming up you're looking forward to, or what's been happening at your place besides modeling?
We talked about this a little earlier. I'm really excited to go see Dune again. I want to see it in IMAX now. I didn't get to see it in IMAX the first time because it was sold out all over the place. So I'm really, really looking forward to that. I'm going to miss you guys. I'm going to have serious FOMO next week because I have another trip I have to do this week, but at least it's in the States. And I can't go to commies this year, so that sucks. But, you know, I can't wait to see the photos from that. And I hear, you know, the bakers are going to be, there's going to be a lot of nice food. Which is always the best thing about
The Bradleys.
Bradleys, yeah. Sorry, yeah,
Mark and Jamie. Yeah,
The Bradleys are going to have some beautiful, you know, the brisket and everything out. And I swear to God, the woman makes the best cookies in the damn world. Excuse my, you know, that's just the way it is. I don't care who what you think, but that oh God, those whatever those oatmeal. I swear to God, I'd sell my mother-in-law to anywhere, but those are the best cookies all. But I'm gonna miss that stuff. That's, you know, but I'll stay online. What am I looking forward to? Looking forward to a Wonderfest in July. So May and July 31st, I'll be leaving here, and then I'm gonna be there for June May 31st, and then June Also is your big show, Scott. Congratulations. I will be there. I've already got my tickets and everything taken care of. Everything is going to be ready to go. I can't wait for the inaugural show. That's definitely, and then other than that, I'm not really sure. Most likely Chicago. Not most likely, more than anything else, Chicago for sure. But
what about Vegas? What about Best of the West?
Yeah, May 18th.
And May 18th. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll be there, definitely. Got to support Joe. He's got to make his money back somehow. So, you know, they've got a lot of that. If you've never been to that show, if you have a chance to go, just go. That show's run by like three or four different groups. Or five groups. They judge their own categories. They the Gundam guys judge the Gundam, the armor amps guys judge the armor, the car group guys judge the car. It's a fantastic system. They invite everybody, and it's a fun time. It's really a good one-day show. You know, that is something that they're building out there in Vegas. It's just is becoming very, very, very. It should be a regional. If it's not, it should be. In my opinion. But, you know, it's a great show out there. They have some great people. Penny is a very well-known figure painter. She does a lot of the judging out there also. And so it's just a great show. The people are fantastic, and it's just a good time. So I can't wait for that one either. Thank you for reminding me about that.
Yeah, that'll be a lot of fun to do that one. We will miss you at Commies as well. Doug's going to be driving out with me to Commies. Doug, you excited to head over to Denver?
I can't wait to get up really, really early in the morning to drive to Denver, because we shoot for us, what, an 8-hour drive, and we shoot to be there by noon.
Yeah.
So we get up early and we get going. It's this is always a fun show, and I cannot wait to hang out with everybody and meet some new people. I mean, in person people that we've gotten to know, you know, online, but getting a chance to meet some folks that we haven't actually been able to spend a weekend with yet. So, yeah, super stoked for that show. I'm also looking forward to Best of the West. I'll definitely be doing that one in May. And other than the local show you guys are putting on here, I don't really have anything else on my radar for the rest of the year. That hopefully will change, but that's where I'm at right now.
Nice. TJ, what shows local are you going to go to back east besides – obviously Commies, but what are some upcoming shows you're looking forward to?
I mean, really the only show I have on my immediate radar other than Commies is Amps Nats. It's the same weekend as my local IPMS show, a Model Classic, which, look, it's a great show, but I'm happy to trade Amps Nats for the Model Classic. The club up here, it's nice guys. It's always a good show. I've been going for a while now. But it just happened to fall on the same weekend. I was trying to get to MFCA in Philly, but it's the same weekend as a concert that I'm already got tickets to, and I'm not. It's my favorite band. It's Bad Religion.
Nice.
Yeah, I've seen them a million times. It's literally like 15 times. But I don't. If they come here, I don't miss it because they're a bunch of old guys and. You know, a bunch of old punk rockers, and you just never know. This every tour could be their last one, and they've made it very clear that they'll stop when they're ready, and you just never know. So, and they're playing with Social Distortion, who I've never seen. I mean, I grew up listening to Social Distortion. I mean, most guys my age probably were introduced to Social D back in the day because they're a pretty classic, you know, West Coast punk rock band. So that's cool. So yeah, The MFC is Friday and Saturday, and the show is Friday. So yeah, I could go because the show's in it's in Maryland at the National Harbor. So it's not that far from Philly. It's probably 3 hours. So yeah, I could get up the next morning and drive up there but I hadn't planned on staying the night in Maryland. I'll just drive back home. It's like an hour from my house. So I'm like, yeah, whatever. So I'm still kind of debating it. If my wife and kids are out of town that weekend, which they may be, I might do it just to drive up for the day and not even spend the night in Philly and just drive back home and just get home late. But that's a lot of driving. I mean, Philly's not like super far from me, but it's not next door either. So that's pretty much it. That's all I really have on the plan on the docket. other than that in SMC in October.
Yeah.
I will be going to that. JB and I are already making plans because tickets are pretty cheap to get into to Amsterdam right now. Probably like half of what I paid last year, which I paid a fair chunk of money to go there last year. It was worth it. Totally worth it. So yeah, I've already started looking at tickets. We're trying to plan something out. Spend a couple more days there this time because last time we flew in, at least Jackson and I did, flew in and then left like in 2 days. So it was a little bit of, as we talked about before, a little whirlwind tour of the Netherlands. But yeah, we were hoping to get in like Wednesday morning instead of like Friday morning. So it's been like two days kind of going to the Ardennes and seeing some of the stuff that I've never seen before.
Yeah, if you're with Benani, I mean, you know, he's known as a modeler, but I mean, the guy should have been a tour agent, you know, just setting things up. You'll be like on the ride of your life. That trip he took last year was amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. So hopefully we can kind of recreate that a little bit. I definitely was excited about the possibility of going. And then I was asked if I would be interested in judging. So I said, of course, yes. So I'm hoping that pans out. I know last year they said they want more American judges. So I'm happy to be one of those people. To me, it's an honor just to even be considered, even if it doesn't work out, because you never know, they might get enough or whatever. But just to be considered to me is an honor. That's probably better than any award I could ever win for building a stupid model. But being asked to, you know, judge some of the best of the best, that's, to me, says everything. To me, I feel like, you know, I've won scale modeling to be invited to something like that. It's pretty cool. It was a good feeling when I got that message a little bit ago. I kind of been sitting on that one a little bit. I haven't really said anything. I mean, I think I might have said something to you guys, but I hadn't really talked about it a whole lot, but it happened and I'm excited. So hopefully it pans out.
That's super cool. I'd also like to go to MFCA. MMSI has become for me just I can't miss it. It's just the show that I really, really look forward to. And I know pretty much the same people go to MFCA to a large part as go to MMSI. So I'd like to maybe catch that, maybe put it on the 2025 calendar.
Yeah, I'd love to go to I feel like MMSI is probably 2025 would be good for me because I probably won't be going to SMC that year because I'll be going to World Model Expo in France that year. Mm-hmm. But that's also going to be like a family trip because my daughter turns 16 and that's where she wanted to go since she was a little kid. I want to go to Paris. So it just happens that World Model Expo is in Versailles, which is right next to Paris. And my wife and I have already decided, yes, we're going to make that trip happen. We're going to take the kids and then we're going to schedule it around World Model Expo. And then for the World Model Expo, I'll skirt out to the show for a day or two while they kind of hang back and do touristy fun things in Paris or wherever, because I'm sure we'll have a car. And yeah, so I would love to go to MMSI, but it's like literally the weekend after SMC. And I just, I can't, as much as I wish I could, as much as I'm sure the way I talk, maybe people think like I can just go wherever I want, whenever I want. That's not really how it works. I have a job. I have a kid. I'm not a millionaire. So I have to plan this shit out. So
yeah.
And well, unfortunately I can't afford to do two shows like that with that significant travel. Cause Chicago is like this is the middle of the country practically from where I live. So it's not drivable. I'd have to fly.
Yeah.
But yes, I would like to go. So I love Chicago. I'm probably one of the few people that has ever said that, but I think Chicago is a beautiful city. I think it's cool. Been there once. I really enjoyed it and I'd like to go back, especially for a show.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a great, great show. Great people, obviously. But, I'd love to go to SMC one of these years too. But this year as you guys know, I've got my sight set on, first of all, as Grant and Doug mentioned, we have our Rocky Mountain Expo here in Salt Lake on June 22nd. That's our inaugural show. So we're working on that. But then in November, I want to go see my buddy Jensen and go over to Telford. And I've never been to the UK, really dying to go to Bovington.
It's lame.
And,
there's a reason why they came here.
Anyway,
I'm just pissed off every British listener of ours.
That's right. That's right. But Jensen, man, I'm looking forward to that. I mean, it'll be interesting to see the scope and scale of Telford, you know, but really more than that, it's just a chance to, you know, to meet Malcolm and James and you and Spud and, you know, all of our friends over there and hang out. That's really what I'm looking forward to, you know, going to Bovington and checking things out. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah. When it comes to Telford, if you can also make it one of those like rounded trips where you do Telford and Bovington and you add stuff to it like we did not last year, year before. It can be a great week. A damn expensive one. Like Telford becomes like the world's biggest hobby shop. It's not a cheap one either. But yeah, there's literally everything there. Didn't do Telford year just gone. So I skipped a year. Looking forward to doing it again. I'd love to see as many people as we possibly can, you know, get there.
Yeah.
I understand the limitations of that, you know, flying into the UK isn't cheap. November, shit weather. But yeah, if people can make it happen, that's amazing because it is a really good event. SMC just the month before, looking forward to that. Like JB says, I'm going, that's a given. I don't have a say. So I'm told I'm looking forward to that as well. That's going to be good. I'm going to do what TJ's doing. Like I flew in same day as TJ and Jackson, like arrived Friday, went Monday. As amazing that trip was, needs to be longer. Like it can't do like SMC and Eindhoven and the Ardennes. You can't do it in 2 days. So definitely want to make that a longer trip. But for now, those two are my only semi-guaranteed shows for this year. Obviously with what I would usually do for Nats, still have no idea because I don't really know what the plan is. So we'll nearer the time we'll work that out. But apart from that, very jealous that like obviously not doing commies, not doing amps, Nats, both shows I would absolutely love to attend. Definitely want to try and plan them for 25. I want to do a lot more in 25. This year there's a lot going on at home I need to work out, but I'd like to say once that's all sorted, big trips and like definitely commies and amps with how everyone's been planning amps this year. It's like, okay, now the buzz seems bigger than Nats now. Like it seems like shit, maybe this is the show to go to. So yeah, I'd love to get these, like a lot more of these events in the calendar.
Yeah. I really want to do Grand Mansion Wonderfest. That's another show that I'd like to get. It's probably not going to happen this year. Aaron Cook just speaks so highly of it, and I'd love to go out and see him and go to the show, but just not sure I could make it work. But Grant, are you thinking about still maybe heading to the UK with Kirsten?
Trying. I don't know. We'll see. I mean, the biggest thing is definitely want to do 2025 in France. That's me and my wife will do that one for sure. We have some stuff going on. I don't know. We're going to try. We're going to try. That's the best I can give you right now. Like TJ said, not made of money. So, you know, and I do work. We all have jobs and stuff like that. So I don't know, but we'll see. That was definitely on my list prior, but it might be financial or not physically, not really able to do it this year. So we'll see, but you know, any show I get to go to is a plus. I'd love to go to Philadelphia. Tell you the truth, I would love to see those guys there. Oklahoma, they have another large figure show there. That's what's supposed, that's, you know, I'd love to do that one. But you know, we'll see. It's crazy that, you know, if you would have said, you know, 3 or 4 years ago that you'd be flying as much as I do right now and going to shows and stuff like that, I would have said, no, you're lying to me. But, you know, it's been fun. And this is a great community. I'm sorry you can't make Wonderfest this year. But, you know, if you do, you know, I got a room for you, or you got a bed for you in the room. So if you do make it, it's great. But, there's so many people I've wanted to see there for so long. Yeah, you know, just the show itself is phenomenal. Seeing the creators, and there's some really good demos and stuff going on by people. I'd love to have gone to Adepticon next weekend with Rick Lawler. That would have been fun. That's where Golden Demon is this year for the United States. So the Golden Demon is being held at Adepticon this year for the United States. So they have, besides the huge amount of wargaming, they've got a massive figure show going on for Warhammer 40K Games Workshop. So, you know, everybody's going to be there for that. And I'm sure Jensen knows about, you know, the Golden Demon Awards and all that kind of stuff from Games Workshop. I know TJ knows all about it. And, you know, it's a major, major award for Games Workshop figure painters and stuff like that. So, but yeah, that there's just so much going on. It's crazy sometimes. I look back and I see everything that's going on. It's like, you know, we're all kind of talking about how, yeah, I've got to work this weekend, but I'm going to fly out this day and then just go to Europe for like 3 days. Here's Jensen coming over for 4 or 5 days. And then I just have to bring up something about Jensen talking about Telford and the amount, how expensive it is. I just want to remind him about the amount of models he brought back from the States. So don't tell us how expensive stuff is, Jensen. You're never going to live.
Yeah, can't argue with that.
You're never going to live that one down.
Ouch. Ouch. Well,
the bank account will never forget it either.
Well, before we get wrapped up, and for everybody other than Jensen, anybody seen any good movies lately?
I watched Star Crash the other night, the 1979 classic. It's an Italian sci-fi movie with David Hasselhoff. And wow, man, if you want to see it, it's free on YouTube.
Apparently classic and David Hasselhoff in the same sentence is something that I'm not comfortable with. But I mean, has everybody but Jensen seen Dune?
Also want to point out that Star Crash was riffed by Mystery Science Theater 3000 when they came back a couple years ago. It's actually nice. Pretty good.
I haven't seen that one. I gotta see that one.
I'd watch that version in a heartbeat.
I started it and I'm like, this is so bad, I have to keep going.
Yeah. It's not a good movie.
It was so bad. But I watched it start to finish, which I don't do very often in one sitting. So
it's considered a cult classic because it's one of those it's so bad as good movies.
Yeah.
I mean it's total 1970s sci-fi just nonsense.
Star Wars knockoffs like Battle Beyond the Stars.
Yeah.
Any of you guys see that?
I think Battle Beyond the Stars. I haven't seen it since I was 12, so I don't know for sure, but Battle Beyond the Stars is probably a lot higher quality than Star Crash.
Ouch. Well, that puts things into perspective. But, you know, things that aren't a cult classic that are going to be a classic. I mean, Dune 2, I think we can probably do this without too many spoilers. But anyway, be warned if you're listening, if you still haven't seen it. Wow. Yeah. TJ, I know you've seen it. Grant, Doug, I think you guys have seen it. But amazing. Villeneuve is very quickly becoming one of my favorite filmmakers.
Yeah, it was damn good. I really enjoyed it. I love the Dune universe, probably like a lot of science fiction fans do. I mean, the universe Frank Herbert created. I like low sci-fi like he does. I'm not if you're not familiar, the listeners aren't familiar with the concept of like low sci-fi and high sci-fi. It's like same as like low fantasy, high fantasy. It's like Lord of the Rings is high fantasy, Game of Thrones is low fantasy. And really it's just because how they set the universes up, right? Frank Herbert didn't describe a lot of things. His stories, the science fiction aspect of his stories wasn't the main focus of his stories. The politics and all that kind of and the human condition, that was the main focus of his stories. Like Dune is more of a fantasy than it is anything else. It just happens to take place on another planet in the future, or planets. So I appreciate that the filmmakers kind of like kept that. Like you don't need to explain everything to us. Like I don't care about, you don't need to try to prove to me that like the Holtzman effect would work in real life. It doesn't matter. It's literally just a thing he made up. Like, oh yeah, they can fold space because of the Holtzman effect. It doesn't matter what that is. Who cares? The story is interesting because the characters are human, and it, you know, and the politics is interesting, and yeah, they kind of lean to that. And I know I mentioned to you, Scott, and we mentioned before we started, and I'm not the only person that said this. I've read it too, but one of the only disappointments I have with the newer movies is they kind of leaned away from the Islamic, you know, ideas and themes that Frank Herbert tapped into in the books. If you read the book, it's all laid out. You know, they don't use the word jihad because of it. rightfully has negative connotations in the 21st century, but the concept is still the concept. And I get it. That stuff doesn't sell in the West. I understand that. It, you know, the end of the day, like, it is a blockbuster movie. You know, Denny may have not made it like it's a blockbuster movie. And I'm sure the actors talk about how it doesn't feel like working on a blockbuster movie, but it is. It's a $200 million movie.
Yeah.
Like, it's, you know.
It's a, and, in terms of budget, that's a bargain these days. It's hard to believe that such an epic could be filmed on location for that amount of money.
Yeah. It is. And that's the other thing I've seen, you know, talked about in articles and stuff. And it is kind of like a, not intentionally, but it could be seen as like an FU to the other studios, where it's a $200 million movie. That's a lot of money. But I've seen movies with budgets much larger than that that look not as good. Special effects don't look like they spent that money on there. And yeah, Denis is a lot of practical effects, a lot of, you know, very limited green screen, that kind of stuff, a lot of on-set location. But you can't make a movie about giant sandworms without adding giant sandworms and spaceships and all that kind of stuff, and, you know, massive machinery like that's in this universe. The scale of the universe is astronomical. Like, the arena on Gaiety Prime is huge. The, you know, Arakeen is huge. The ships that they use are huge. Like, in they're you can't do that without special effects and spending money, but they're able to make all of that look. There wasn't a VFX shot in that movie that didn't look convincing.
Right. Yeah.
When you look at some of the, especially some of the more recent Marvel movies, which, okay, give or take, you know, however you feel about them, for the most part, like the Avengers and the Avengers Endgame, like, that special effects holds up. Like, it looks good. Like, yeah, we all know it's not real, but it looks really good. But then a lot of other movies, it looks really cheap. And like, wow, they spent almost $300 million on this movie, but it looks like they didn't. Yeah. And they did not do that with Dune. And it's awesome because it kind of goes back to, you know, Godzilla. Was it Godzilla Minus One?
Yeah. Yeah.
It won the Oscar for best visual effects with a budget of like $100 million, if that.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? That tells you, if you know what you're doing and you don't like treat these visual effects artists like they're slaves and work them to death, essentially. And, you know, I'm sure people have heard the horror stories of what these people said it's like working for these VFX studios and the time crunch that they're under, because the studio says this movie has to be out at this point, it has to be done, and it looks half done half the time because it's not physically possible to do it. If you give a filmmaker the tools and the time to make his, to do his job, you get your money's worth. And I feel like Dune Part Two and like Godzilla Minus One, like that proves that. If you let a filmmaker be a filmmaker, you know what I mean? Like, that you get success. Those movies have both been successful. Like,
it's interesting,
Dune,
too.
Dune is niche for science fiction because it's freaking weird, man. Like, it's bizarre. The movie has the characters in the movie are talking to a fetus that's not even alive yet. Like, oh my God, I just saw this in a $200 million blockbuster movie. What the hell? What is going on here?
You know, but Villeneuve and Nolan is doing this as well, is, you know, really dedicated to making sure that digital effects are more an enhancement than a main course in the movie. It's like in Blade Runner 2049, you know, he went to Weta and had, you know, the cityscapes and everything. Those are all scale models, just like the original Blade Runner. And, you know, a lot of location shoots, and, you know, he's using green screen where he has to, but it's really not something, you know. I think Oppenheimer, I don't think there was any digital effects in the entire movie. You know, these filmmakers, I think, are getting it that, you know, people are tired of, you know, the entire movie being sort of done in front of a green screen. And, you know, even other studios are doing it, you know, some of the Disney, like the Mandalorian and some of that stuff is done with a lot more practical effects than in the past. So I think that's a good thing for Hollywood. But yeah, I think the magic is that Villeneuve loved Lawrence of Arabia since he was like 12 years old. He's literally wanted to make this movie as a love letter kind of back to the desert and the culture and the jihad, like TJ mentioned. And he's literally been thinking about this since he was a teenager. And you can see that passion on the screen. And like TJ said, it's kind of a niche thing, but it's going to be, I feel like it's going to be right up there with Lord of the Rings and Star Wars as a science fiction standard, you know, that other films are going to be judged against.
I mean, not even a science fiction standard. I mean, the performances in that movie are great. I love movies, right? I absolutely love movies. You know, I'm not like a real like movie nerd, but like I love movies. I love the craft of making movies. I like actors who are good at what they do. And everyone in that movie was amazing. Every single person. You know, I thought Timothy Chalamet was phenomenal the whole movie, especially towards the end when he's down in the southern region and whatever the big Fremen city is. I don't remember what they called it, but when he's there, the meeting of all the sieges, and he commands that room, like that was good. That was like really, really good. Like not everyone can do that, right? Like people give actors a hard time. Like their job is hard. I don't care what anyone says. I wouldn't want to do it, frankly. Like it looks miserable a lot of times. Like, yeah, they're all millionaires, but also their job freaking sucks a lot of times. It's hard as shit. It was amazing. Javier Bardem as Stilgar was great. He was essentially comedic relief, but not like cheesy or forced, right? Like I just thought he was great. The character is great. And, you know, and listening to, I watched a video of Javier Bardem talking about it and I believe him. And he's like, look, I read Dune when I was younger and Stilgar was my favorite character. I thought he was great in the movie. And when they were making the first one, he's like, when Denis reached out to me and said, hey, I want you to be Stilgar. He's like, you literally just, I love that character. I know this story. I know the character. And I thought he was fantastic. And I thought Zendaya's as Chani was great too.
I think there's a lot of people in there too that, you know, like Christopher Walken as the Emperor. He was, and, you know, Dave Bautista, you know, you didn't expect that. And he did a fantastic job. You know, these guys, you know, Christopher Walken is Christopher Walken. You can, you know, that's just who he is. But, you know, the roles they played in that movie were so out of their norm. For me, it was great.
It's funny because like a lot of people complain about Christopher Walken, but I love like classic Christopher Walken. Like,
yeah.
I spent 6 years with this uncomfortable hunk of metal up my ass, like, you know, from Pulp Fiction. Like, get that. Like, that's hilarious. Yeah. But I can also watch Christopher Walken and not think of his cameo in Pulp Fiction, right?
Yeah.
Like, as funny as it was.
Yeah.
I think right behind Timothy Chalamet was Rebecca Ferguson, who I adore.
Amazing.
And I think she's been awesome in everything I've seen her in. Like, she was great in the, Mission Impossible movies that she was in?
Yeah.
She was awesome in those movies.
Yeah.
And she's
Josh Brolin. I mean, Josh Brolin.
Yeah.
Josh Brolin.
He's another one of those dudes where, like, I don't think he's ever done a movie where I'm like, man, the worst part of this movie is Josh Brolin.
Yeah.
I thought Rebecca Ferguson, I thought she was amazing. She underwhelmed a little bit in the first movie. And, you know,
they almost didn't give her much to do in the first movie, honestly.
Yeah. I think that wasn't about her. I think it was about the script, but they definitely is not the case. And I was really impressed with Florence Pugh. She really, in very limited screen time, really brought Princess Irulan to life and brought a lot of different dimensions to that character as well. Yeah, it's a terrific movie.
I did like how they used her, like, I guess, like writing everything down and then like reading it to herself as she's writing it is like almost like an homage to like all the little forewords before all the chapters in the book, because it's all from what she wrote down, like far, you know, after the story happened. Like, I thought that was pretty cool, because that was one of the things where, like, because I didn't want to know any spoilers. I know how the story ends, obviously, but I didn't want to know specific movie stuff. And that was one of the things, I think it was like on Reddit, people were like, how are they gonna, like, she doesn't have a lot. I mean, it's not really in the book. Like, but obviously you don't get Florence Pugh for like 5 seconds of screen time. Right.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, that was the question. How are they going to like work all that in? And the way they did, I thought was awesome. Like, that's her writing everything down, because why wouldn't she?
Yeah. Doug, you've been kind of quiet, but we got to talk about Hans Zimmer's score to go along with the cinematography. I mean, incredible.
Yeah. I've had it on in the car. probably 4 or 5 times already since I've seen it. It's amazing. He's got some new themes. He obviously wove in a lot of the part one themes into it, but he made this one very unique. And I would, you know, when it comes to, we talk about, people have said it's like Empire Strikes Back to Star Wars. And the score is like that to me too, because where the Empire Strikes Back just took the original episode 4, I hate calling it that. It's Star Wars for Pete's sake. Come on. Williams had taken it and blown it up and added all this incredible stuff. Well, Zimmer's done the same thing with Dune Part 2's score. It's phenomenal. It's got some great themes. It's got some great sounds. There are things, without giving it away, those of you that haven't seen it, there are scenes that are kind of uncomfortable in the movie, and the music without the pictures, without the moving pictures, is kind of uncomfortable to listen to, because it was just that well made. It's not uncomfortable in a bad way,
yeah.
But they make sure, you know, if this guy's bad, this guy's real bad. So the music tells you that story so well.
That reminds me, one of my favorite parts of the movie, I'm not going to spoil it for people that haven't seen it, but there's a part, a critical part of the story in the end, where Villeneuve makes the decision to completely pull the music out. And it makes this piece of the story that's very, very critical, super intimate and intense. I remember watching it, and I know what happens. I've read the book. I know the story. My heart was pounding, and it was because he pulled all the music out of that part of the movie. It's a really interesting but effective choice by Villeneuve to do that. And poor Jensen sitting over there in his cheeseburger snuggie just going, what are you guys doing?
You can see it too. It's okay. but I'd say watch Band of Brothers first.
Yes, please.
Yeah, of my list of things to watch, it's long. I don't know where Dune is on this list, but it'll be there somewhere.
Jensen, Marty Robbins would have loved Dune.
Yeah.
Well, that's it. I've got to watch it now.
Awesome. Well, I know a couple of us have got to run, but guys, it was great catching up. Thank you so much to everybody out there, again, to our sponsors and to the people that helped make the 48 and 48 a success. Thank you so much. An amazing amount of money was raised. It's going to help a lot of people. So thank you to the Posse community for that. We'll see some of you this coming weekend. I'll miss the others that we won't see. And then we'll be back in a couple of weeks with another episode of the Posse. But I appreciate everybody, and we'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey guys.
See you guys.
Bye-bye.
Doug, you got a yeehaw in you?
I'll try. Yeehaw!
There you go.
Taking one for the team. Thanks, man. Take care, you guys.
All right. Bye.